What is it to be a Christian? What is a Christian? Well, there are a great number of things that people might answer to that question. And maybe they would be, even if I asked you, there might be different things you might emphasize in that. But surely one thing that it is to be a Christian is to be a follower of Christ. And if we are to follow Christ, then the things he says and the things he does ought to be formative on us. Our view of the world ought to be shaped by Jesus' view of the world, if we are to be Christian, if we are to be followers of Christ. So turn to this passage with that in view. Jesus' view of the world is to shape our view of the world. Look at the passage, because as we look at this passage, we learn some things about what Jesus sees as he looks out on the world. The first thing to say is that he saw how things are. He saw how things are. Jesus, we're told in verse 35 of Matthew 9, went through all the towns and synagogues, all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness. Jesus, as he surveys the situation, as he looks out in this region, he sees a need. He sees things as they are. And so he begins to meet that need. See what he does. He teaches in the synagogues. He's preaching the good news of the kingdom. And he's healing every disease and sickness. It is quite remarkable when you hear of these crowds that would gather around Jesus and he would heal them. And he did so from morning till night. If Roz and Rosie had worked in first century Judea, they would have been out of work. Jesus was, healing every disease and sickness. Imagine what it would be like if in the forest, if in Chepstow where Rosie works, if all the sick were suddenly not sick anymore. You can't get your head around that, can you? The aches and pains you feel in the morning. Mary, struggling with her knees. The frailty you feel about different things. The family members and the friends you know and their illness. Something remarkable is going on here, isn't it? But although you might say that is remarkable, he doesn't merely, if I can say that, he doesn't merely heal all the disease and sickness. But rather, what is he? He's teaching in their synagogues, in their chapels, in the place where they gather so that God's word could be heard. Jesus is teaching. You have to settle for me this evening, I'm sorry. But they get Jesus there on a Sabbath day morning to teach them. And proclaiming good news, preaching the good news of the kingdom. Of course, Jesus is both the bearer here of good news, but he is also the subject of the good news. Without him, there is no good news. And the good news of Jesus and all that he has done for us in his death on the cross, well, that's what we're about, isn't it? That's what we're to do. Maybe you can't heal every disease and sickness. Even the doctors among us can't heal every disease and sickness. But we can do good where we're able to, for those in physical need. Jesus saw the need, and he responded to it. In teaching, in preaching good news, and in healing. But look on, verse 36. He saw how things are. Yes, he saw the need, but look, he sees their condition. He saw the crowds and he had compassion on them. Why? Because they were harassed and helpless. They were like sheep without a shepherd. Jesus saw their condition. And he had insight. He understood it. Now, 2 years ago I was buying a house. If you've bought a house, you know what it's like. You go in, you walk around, you try and ask vaguely intelligent questions. You look at things and you think, well, no, that ceiling's not falling down. And I can't see water cascading through the floorboards. The window's almost closed. I'm sure this house is wonderful. Now, I have a friend, his name is Joel. He's a building surveyor. Now, when he walks into my house, he sees all the things that I didn't see. I presume it's supposed to be like that. I thought it was called a feature. But he has insight. He knows. Now look at this verse here. Someone who sees that they're harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Who would spot that? Surely it's the good shepherd. Isn't he the one who sees what is going on with sheep? He's able to see things as they really are. He sees their condition. But his response is what? To this harassed and helpless, this scattered shepherdless flock. It's not to look on and say, not much hope for them, is there? No, rather we are told he has compassion. To enter into their suffering, to suffer alongside them, to feel for them, to grieve for them, to be concerned for them. He isn't dismissive of them because they're weak and struggling. And he doesn't look at them and think, well, these people can't advance my cause. So often we view people like that, don't we? What can they do for us? They can do nothing for Jesus. But he has compassion on them. Jesus then, he saw how things are. But the second thing I want us to see as we look at this, he saw how things are. He saw what could be. He saw what could be. If you or I looked at them, if we had the insight to spot there was a problem, we'd probably have written them off. Look at them, they're harassed and helpless, they're like sheep without a shepherd. What prospect do you see for the church here in St. Rose? What prospect do you see for the cause of Jesus here in this village? In this community, in the surrounding villages, in the forest? What prospect for the gospel in the United Kingdom? When you look at it, does it seem harassed and helpless? Withering and feeble and marginalized and pretty hopeless. Jesus, as he looks, this is remarkable. He says to his disciples, in response to seeing these harassed, helpless people, like sheep without a shepherd, he looks at them and he says to his disciples, the harvest. He's speaking about people. The harvest is plentiful. The harvest is more than you can imagine. The harvest is too big for you to cope with. Because the workers are few. Do you remember the miraculous catch of fish? They're in the boat, they've been fishing all night, they don't catch anything. He says, well, why don't you try the other side? He shouts from the shore. And they try it, and then suddenly they can't bring in the nets because they're not there. And they have to call the other boats to come and assist them. Jesus says, the harvest is plentiful. But the workers are few. The prospect is beyond what you can grasp. What God is able to do is too much for you to cope with. And he says there's this problem, the workers are few. Why are the workers few? Well, the secret is in the name. Because being a worker involves work. It's hard. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Jesus has this insight. he sees what the harvest might be. What is the limiting factor on the size of the church here? What is the limiting factor on the size of this church here? There aren't that... Well, in one sense, no. There aren't that many of us here this evening. There were more this morning. Is it that there aren't enough people who need to hear about Jesus? No, it is true that we live in a small community, isn't it? What's the population of St. Breville? Census data, I think, is kind of the village and its outlier is about 1,200 people. That's only 1,200 people. Are those 1,200 people committed to serving Jesus in a local church? We were about 30 here this morning. Where were the other 1,170? Well, what about down in the parish church? Perhaps another 20, I suppose. Well, okay. Maybe there are people who drive to other churches. There's a handful drive over to Bream. I don't know how many. Let's call it 10. I don't think there's even as many as 10. But there you go. There's a few people driving over to Bream. Do you know anyone who goes to church elsewhere? I'm not saying they don't, but I don't know anyone. Yes, suppose they do. Perhaps there are 10 people go to another church somewhere. That leaves, what, 1,130, I think. Where were they this morning? Are we so few this evening because there's a shortage of people? Where are those people destined? Outside of Jesus, they're hurtling to hell. Jesus says the harvest is plentiful. The harvest is plentiful. If you want to begin, there's 1,100 and a few extras to begin with. The harvest is plentiful. I know we've only got 80 seats, but we'll find a way around that. So what is the problem then? Well, here it is. Jesus tells us that the workers are few. There's plenty of work to be done. There are souls to be harvested. We saw that this morning, didn't we? The idea of people as being the crop. There are souls to be harvested, but there are few to do it. That's what Jesus says as he looks out. Is that true here? Yes, I believe it is. Maybe you look at the church and you say, well, everything seems to be going on okay. I'm not really needed. Or maybe you look and say, well, there's not much going on here for me to get involved in, to use my gifts. Well, let me tell you that in part, the issue is this. The workers are few. What is it that we could do if we had more workers? How big is your imagination? How bold can you be? If we had the workers, would we run a weekly lunch club for the elderly? Would we run a weekly table tennis club for the teenagers who are hanging out in the bus stop at the minute? Would we run a homework club helping kids after school? Would we organise a food bank? Would we have a range of Sunday school classes? Or if we had the workers, maybe we just have the same class but spread out so it didn't always fall to the same few people. If we had the workers, would we run a counselling service for those in debt? If we had the workers, would we run a youth club or holiday Bible clubs? If we had the workers, would we have a program of systematically visiting all the elderly and the bereaved in our community? If we had the workers, would there be more people helping at the after-school club so it didn't just fall on a few? If we had the workers, would we run a mother and toddlers group? Would we run a coffee morning 3 times a week? And if you're groaning at the prospect of doing coffee morning 3 times a week, it's because the workers are few. If we had the workers, then sharing the load, it wouldn't seem such a burden, would it? Which of those would we do? I don't know. Maybe we'd do all of them. Maybe we wouldn't do any of them. We'd do other things instead. That's something that we would trust that God would lead us to, isn't it? But understand this. Jesus says the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. If we had the workers, we would train them up and we would send them out as well, that they would serve in other places. Other churches in this country, maybe establish new churches in this country. They'd go and serve God overseas. Do you see, as Jesus saw, that the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few? So Jesus saw how things are, and he saw what could be. But learn from Jesus in this. He saw what should be done. He saw what should be done. And he tells his disciples, where are we to begin? The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore. Where do we begin? We begin on our knees. We begin by praying. James, when he writes his letter, says, you don't have because you don't ask God. And when you do ask, he says, you ask with wrong motives. This is where to begin then, by asking God. Be serious about asking God to provide workers. Now, notice who it is that we're to ask, who it is that we pray to. It is, see it there in verse 38, the Lord of the harvest. He is the one who is in control of the harvest. It is his harvest field, as it says later on in the same verse, and as we saw this morning. Let me be really blunt and direct. We cannot pretend that we are concerned about the harvest, concerned about the work of the church here and the church elsewhere, unless we are diligent in praying. Praying that because the harvest is plentiful, says God, that he would send workers. There is a prayer meeting every Monday evening. There is a prayer meeting every Tuesday morning. Why don't you come to those occasions and ask the Lord of the harvest that he would send workers? And maybe you say to me, well, I can pray at home. I can pray anywhere at any time. And that is true. You can. And my response, I suppose, is to say, but do you? You know, the usefulness of us coming together in prayer is that we focus our attention for that time, particularly on praying. When you say you could pray, do you turn off the TV and unplug the phone and put down the book and stick the dog out in his crate so that nothing would interrupt you for that hour? No? Well, then come and join with us here without those distractions. And if your answer is yes, I do, well, then you may as well come and join us here. Well, you don't even have to take those measures to avoid the distractions. Come and join with the church as they pray together. Read Acts, you'll see that the early church prioritized praying together. Acts 1, they all joined together constantly in prayer. We're to make this a priority in prayer. We're to be diligent, serious about this. Asking the Lord of the harvest that he would send out workers into his harvest field. Notice, ask that he would send. It is reliant on him. He is the Lord. He's sovereign. He's the Lord of the harvest. It's his. He was sovereign in saving us for himself. He's sovereign over the harvest. He's sovereign in providing workers for his field. And we need to ask him. And we can ask him, and we can ask him in confidence. Asking in confidence because we know we're coming to the Lord of the harvest. But also because he said to you, ask for this. You know, maybe you are like me and you sometimes scratch your head. You think, I don't know what to pray right now. Well, you go, stick this on the top of your list. If you're ever unsure of what to pray at any given moment, begin with this, because Jesus says, pray this. Pray that the Lord of the harvest would send workers into his harvest field. Well, he saw what should be done. And he saw what could be, and he saw how things are. But lastly, he saw their responsibility. He saw their responsibility. They have a responsibility to pray. Yes. You have a responsibility to pray. Yes. What happens next? Ask the Lord of the harvest to send out workers, Jesus says to them. And you can see the disciples are nodding. Oh, yes, 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 that's a good idea, Lord. We'll do that. You have a Bible open in front of you, don't you? Read on now, the next few verses, into chapter 10. Oh, we definitely need workers, they say. He called his 12 disciples to him and gave them authority to drive out evil spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. And then in verse 2, 3, and 4, it lists their names. And then we're told this in verse 5. These 12 disciples Jesus sent out with the following instructions. Don't go to the Gentiles, go to the lost sheep of Israel, and as you go, preach this message. Kingdom of heaven is near. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those with leprosy, drive out demons, and so on. Ask the Lord of the harvest to send workers. Oh yes, we definitely need workers. Oh, and by the way, it's you. What? It is the very next thing he says to them. It's the next thing that Matthew records for us. Do not miss this. They have a responsibility to pray. Yes. But they also have a responsibility to do. You have a responsibility to pray, but you also have a responsibility to do. What were you hoping would happen? That you would start praying for workers and suddenly a coachloads would line up on the high street with gifted, talented, committed, concerned Christians queuing to get involved in the life of the church here? It's not how it works. That God would send people from one place to another place to do his work. Does that seem reasonable? No, ask that the Lord would raise up workers and then understand that it is you who are to work. Jesus says to them, ask the Lord of the harvest to send out workers. Now go out and work. It is you. It is I. It is us as we gather together as a church who will do those things, who will reach this community with the good news, who will teach, who will deal with physical needs. It is you who will work for Christ in this village, or nobody will. Now, pray for workers. Pray that God would equip and motivate us, the members of this church. Yeah, pray that people would see their way to joining us and laboring alongside us. Fine. Pray particularly that those who are harvested, those who come in as a result of those prayers and those labors, that they would themselves become laborers in turn. There is a plentiful harvest, says Jesus. There are few workers, says Jesus. So ask that he would send workers. And then go and be those workers.